At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's coming. As promised, folks, my friend Ali, he's just served almost two decades in prison. He's not hip to technology. We ran through this with him today. He's a great guy, and he's such a charismatic person as well. He's been through hell. He has caused some hell. He's caused some hell himself. He takes full responsibility. He served his time. But I mean, I've been in some scrapes, but Ali has lived a life like a character out of Scarface.
So, sir, come on, sir. Sir, I even selling all of goddamn pills and doing all this talking now, man. What the hell this world have got to? We was on no talking, now we're doing a bunch of talking.
We were all cuddle puddles. So just to lay down some of your credentials, then, you know, I've told the viewers that you've been in some Diddy videos and many other videos. I'm gonna. What is it? Jim Jones is the first one I think you showed us. Let's see. Here we go. So you're in the beginning of this one, right?
Oh yeah, that's my Porsche too.
All right, I'm gonna play the beginning of this one for the viewers to see you in action. I'm gonna keep the sound muted, viewers, so we don't get a copyright strike.
Yeah.
And, here we go.
Whoa. That's me. That's my Porsche. Oh.
Let me make it bigger. Where is it?
Yeah.
All right. So there's the beginning of that one.
Yeah.
We've already got 2,000 people watching live. Let me just get rid of this one for a second. I've been doing most of the talking, Ali. So can you just briefly just say hello to the viewers, and this is a chance to introduce yourself.
Hey, what's going on, UK? I'm Ali Zoe Adams, Zoe Pound. I'm Haston. I'm out of Miami. Miami is where I'm raised, and I must say, for all entertainers in America, if you want to enjoy your money, you must come to Miami. It's the number one place to enjoy your money. When you go to Ocean Drive, all you see is G-strings. Far as the eyes can see.
And we're gonna get into your story before we get to the partying with Diddy and all the big names and stuff.
Yeah.
But just to give the viewers a little tease of what's coming, what kind of names did you party with?
They partied with me.
Like, exactly.
You know, yeah. You know, it was a little different. Guys from the streets was very, you know, collar popping, you know? And everybody wanted to mimic the life and try to see how to move, how to swag, how to talk. And use the words in their music. So, you know, every night is like 300 people with me. So, you know, it was differential people with me every night. You know, I was making great money. I got indicted for $172 million. So, you know, that's just some money laundering. Yeah. Sean, you was acting an ass now. Stop it. You was acting an ass now. They outlawed your ass, man. That motherfucker can't come back, though. Man, don't bring him back. Yeah.
All right. So guys, I'm going to go over some of Ali's backstory before we get to the party stuff. And Ali has agreed, you know, he can talk about some Diddy stuff, 50 Cent stuff, Jay-Z. We've got all this stuff coming up. But before we get to that, Ali, let's go back, you know, over your life history. How did it begin for you? What was it like for you growing up?
I came from Haiti, 1984. We had a president called Jean-Claude Duvalier, and he was a dictator. But I wasn't a minority, and I wasn't poor. I was under his regime. And so his regime had a coup d'etat, and his regime lost power. And when they lose power, everybody that's in the administration, you got to put tires over them and burn them up. So we had to leave. So we jumped on the boats, exiled to Miami. Sad to say, one boat flipped over with my auntie, flipped over with three cousins, four aunts, you know, two uncles, and, you know, I lost family members, but I reached Miami personally for me, but, you know, it's always been a heartfelt issue, but I landed in Miami-Dade, Florida, 1984.
Man, that must have been heartbreaking to lose family members like that.
Yeah, with some good family members, cool uncles too, man. Yeah, but you know, not just me. Many people take this trip from Haiti, Virgin Islands, Trinidad, Dominican Republic, trying to go to America, and there ain't number of sharks out there. If that boat flip, it's over with. Sharks gonna eat you up. It's over with. Don't even try to come up. You're dead.
What was it like getting established?
Established as far as where?
In America.
Oh, I wasn't really embraced. There was a lot of immigrants, crucial issues going on, and I wasn't cool. We had to say, what's up? And I wanted to be a pilot for my mother. And in school, I'm being targeted. So I'm the show in third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade where I'm fighting. I'm steady fighting. To you know what I'm saying? So within that, my mother got a store in Carroll City. So 19 of us stayed in a house in Carroll City, and my mother bought a store. And in front of the store, come to find out, it was a crack epidemic. So, you know, guys was like, you can own the store if you want, but we own the front of the store. So we had to negotiate, so it became something that got immune to me to try to, you know, understand what's going on. But I fell in love with they were looking good. They were looking real, real sporty and flattered and flamboyant. And they were really, you know what I'm saying, coming through in some nice rides. And girls was like, hey, they wasn't saying hey to me. You know, so, you know.
Had you watched any movies, like gangster movies, as a young man that had an impression on you?
Gangster movies, you know, Scarface is out of Miami, because I really came up with a lot of Cubans. You know, from Miami, all we had was, our historical issue was Castro and Cuba and Uncle Luke. They were our, you know, some people like Atlanta got Martin Luther King, you know what I'm saying, Malcolm, you know, Alabama has Tennessee, New York got 5%, but for Miami, it was Castro and Uncle Luke Skywalker. So it was something that I could tell mold me, you know?
How realistic was Scarface?
The Cubans had it. Because I ended up doing, when I, to go all the way, You know, I was selling drugs from 1985 to 2007. So the government had me in a small quad with the Ochoa brothers and the Rodriguez brothers. And Bad Boys 2 did a movie on me. They say Zoe Pound 7 times in the movie with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. So my mother was bringing clothes to the dock. And while she bringing clothes to the dock, I uncover that, oh, shoot, I see the Colombians them and doing their thing. So I embraced it like, oh, I need to do an interception. So I started to intercept their things. You know, I lost dudes too. Dudes' hands got cut off. My man's them got burned up. A lot of things happened behind that, but I really it became, and like I was saying, when I ended up getting indicted, I was in a quad with Ochoa brothers and Rodriguez brothers. I'm asking, why am I here? Because they're talking crazy. They talk Ali, about I Ali, bought let, a tank from Yugoslavia.
Ali, let me stop you real quick, because I got to explain to the viewers. So what Ali's saying is he was incarcerated with the Ochoa brothers and the heads of the Cali cartel, and the Ochoa brothers were one of the main of the four factions of the Medellin cartel. So these were the head guys of the Medellin and the Cali cartels. And Ali, he was so serious what he done, he was housed with these guys.
Right.
Yep.
Uh-huh. That's it there. Yeah.
All right. So, yep. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm housed with them. So I'm really trying to find out, why am I housed with these dudes? Like, these dudes are talking another kind of language over here with me. These dudes are saying, oh, you know, I just said, we buying a tank from Yugoslavia and Georgia and Czechoslovakia and rocket launchers. I'm like, what? I wasn't doing all of that. I was just a little drug dude in the city doing my thing, but I was very impressed with what they was doing. But, you know, I sincerely try to understand why we had the same prosecutor. But, you know, I got to know them. I read their books. I read everything they went through. Fabio Ochoa, all of them, we got close. They'd be like, here go $500, man. Just they drunk coffee like it was water. I'd be like, huh? I did 3 years and 7 months in a room by myself. They was across the hall, Rodriguez, but they did 5 years and change across the hall from me. So, you know, we all we had.
Ali, going back to your life story then, you know, you've described, you know, coming to America, the horrors that your family went through. How did you rise up the ranks as a young man?
Well, in Miami, there was a guy named Kenneth Booby Williams, Booby Boys. He was very well known. He had like 600 dudes around him, and he kept a equilibrium to where everybody will hold their temperature because of him. But he was in front of my mother's store. So he had a liking to me. So he would be like, hey, come with me. He would have personal talks with me and holler at me. He worked me. He told me to go work in Jackson, Mississippi. You know what I'm saying? He told me to go work in Pensacola, Escambillon, projects. So I would cook up, he would teach me how to cook up the crack in a pot, and I could break it down to where it's $119,000 in nickel rocks and $5 pieces. So he became like a mentor to me, you know, through that 80s and 90s era, you know?
And what challenges confronted you during, you know, early on?
Well, a lot of challenges that come around is a lot of dudes can smell if you don't know what you're doing and if your heart ain't strong, you know? It's just like the UK. I think their heart is strong because they got to use knives. And we, you know, we had guns. But I understood, you know, they understood my heart was strong. And I always be saying, man, you not God. I don't see what the fuck you saying, man. What's up? Do this, do that, do that. So I grew up. I went through a lot of shootouts, a lot of discipline where it's like, okay, we respect it. Let's do it. So everybody bring my money back, you know?
What was the first shootout?
Oh, man. One dude caught me in the auto parts store. He just went to shoot me. But it's been a lot, you know, and
Give us a nice detailed shootout story.
Okay. Shit, I'm leaving a dead end street, and this dude, I told him, do not give this dude no more bricks. He's not gonna do right. So he kept on. So, you know, he had 60 of them. So I kept it. But I'm like, that's it. You know, his money was fucked up. So I knew he was broke. So he had no money for war. At least I thought so. But then he crept up on me. I was in Lexus. My man Joe is driving a Lexus. My man Maka is driving is in the passenger seat. I'm in the back. So we drive, we coming up out of the dead end. When I get to the stop sign, a Suburban pull up, rah, and they let loose. Boom, 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 they let loose. So I'm just like, God damn, I got blessed. The driver got hit 8 times. The passenger got hit 2 times. It was bad because he got hit in the back. He was paralyzed. So I had to jump out the car. I jump out the car. I go in the middle of the street, I see a hero. Ah! I jump in the driver's seat and force myself in his car. I take his car, I drive by them. But my homeboys there, I'm like, man, help me with my friends, man, help me with my friends. And I grab my homeboy, my cop who's hit in the back. He like, nah, I can't walk. I'm like, come on, I can't walk. He like, I can't feel my leg. I'm like, God damn. Man, come on. So I'm like, oh, shit, great. Hey, I look, the hero trying to leave. I'm like, oh, shit. Hey. So finally, he not scared. He like, come on, man, get his leg. So he grabbed his leg. I grab his hand. And we bring him in the car. When I bring him in the car, my man in the driver's seat, strong. He hit 8 times. He's like a mummy. Ah, he moving. Ah, coming out. Come on, boy, let's go. I grab him. I throw him in the car. So I drive by the hospital. We always been known, don't ever go in the hospital. I let him out in front of the emergency room and, you know what I'm saying? Both of them live, God bless, you know? But, a lot of emphasis, but you know, that one there's on every news station, so I just repeat it all the time.
Did that situation make you rethink your occupation?
Nah, they called the police the next day. So it was as, I was built for it. Sometimes I think words are powerful too. You know, sometimes I think a drug dealer's dream is to go to the feds or to die. And hopefully you get a wake up, but I didn't have no understanding. It was straight, make millions, and all I wanted to be is nobody can ever be the king of the Wild Boys, but all I ever wanted to be was Miami, the ultimate dude. That, I didn't want no other dream in my life, so I wasn't checking out.
What was the worst injury you ever sustained on the streets?
I've been blessed. I've been blessed, you know, and I've been blessed not to get shot. I've been in a lot of shootouts, but God bless me. I haven't been shot, you know, God bless, you know. And, I've gone through a lot of people that has been, but, you know, nah, Not me.
All right. So in England, then.
Sean, you been stopped before in Arizona?
No.
Oh, all right. One thing I say about the plug, they indict 24, not the plug. They shoot at them, not the plug. They go there, not the plug.
So in England, then, it's gangs by area. There's a thing called postcode wars.
Yeah.
Postcode's like zip code.
Okay.
So for the people in England, then, can you explain when you came to America, what were the gangs? What were the different gangs? And how did your gang start?
Well, in Miami, it was the 40s. Before it was like my man Dewey and Trent. It was Lynch Mob. It was Cloverleaf, the Jamaicans, Kerry Rudolph, Rotan, Blocka. And there was a lot of different ones. But, you know, we was mostly on some conscious speaking. Because when you come to find out, we're living in an environment where there's no building over three floors. And we never go downtown or the South Beach. So we're trying to find economic money right here. And we allowing white people to come to the beach. We don't know they partying, having this ball, you know, in my early stage. So they got money for crack. They're taking a crack. and they want it. And I make sure it's a safe environment. And if I look, it's not like meth and fentanyl or what you was doing, because we measured everything. 0.5, 3.5, 28 grams. Now it's like, huh. So it's as the games today, they gotta get better on some mathematics as far as talking history and understanding that if you're not making no economic money, we short-lived, it's not really worth it, you know?
What year did you found your gang?
1992.
And how did that come about?
We was in jail, and they wouldn't let the Haitians have their Haitian cell. And so Liberty City had a cell, Overtown had a cell, Opa-locka had a cell, and we keep telling the warden, why we ain't got no Haitian cell? He's not embracing immigrants also. He's like, there's never gonna be a banana boat ass cat eating Haitian cell. We all don't give a fuck. He keep on with joking, let it be known as his jail. And when we do enter another man's cell, it's like, hey, knock on the door, call the police. We like, man, that's not gonna happen. Man, can we just get a little bunk over here, man? We gonna get out your way? Nah, you gotta leave. All right. But we not finna yell for no police to come get us. We ready to die. So how we gonna do this? So, you know, we end up fighting real good, whooping a lot of ass. So by fighting, all we fighting is 16 or we fighting every cell. We fighting. We ended up about to get a Haitian cell, but when we do get one, an American like, how do you say bones? And we say, Zo. Why? He like, Zo? Oh, yeah? Man, I don't want no problem with the Zo. So the correction officer started to say, I heard about the Zo. Like, why you keep saying this word Zo? So the other inmates are like, hey, what's up, Zo? Like, why you keep calling me Zo? That's not my name. So it became a reputable aspect where people like, what's up, Zoe? And it took like a little while when we like, okay, hey. Because we knew the roots of it was what we had to go through to fight to get a cell. So we embraced the Zoe. And you know what I'm saying? And it became a big life world. Where today, if you ask a police officer that's Haitian, if you ask a nurse, if you ask a firefighter, are you a Zoe? They're going to step 2 feet in front of you and say, yes, I am. Just like every Jamaican is a dread, every Haitian is a Zoe.
Wow. How did it grow then over the years?
It just became something we embraced, man. Culture. It's a culture. It's not really a game. It's not a game. It's a culture. Every Haitian.
So you must, you know, look back and see how it grew and be proud of this influence you've had on the culture.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We got songs tatted on my chest because I'm a Zoe. We got Boston, Haitian, that's Zoe. We got Brooklyn dudes, Zombie Zoes, New Jersey, like it passed Miami. We got them, North Carolina, Rocky Mountain, man, we Zoes here. And it's as it branched off, just like in your city. But I don't want to say it as a gang aspect, Bloods and Crips, but it became something that other people can say, you know what? I can embrace that. I can understand the philosophy. And, you know, besides entering the history of Haiti, of our founding fathers, you know, Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, you know what I'm saying, of what they did. So it became a big aspect, and then, you know, it became Zoe Pound.
So as a young man, what were your earliest musical influences?
There's a dude in Miami with Uncle Luke Skywalker. He's the first person out of Miami to bring a record label to the South. Uncle Luke, we got to give him that, you know? I got him right there, Uncle Luke. But, you know, he's the first person to bring it down South. You know, Jermaine Dupri, he was something big too. You know, Colin Paul, you know, Dallas Austin. But Uncle Luke was the first one, Jay Prince. But Uncle Luke was the first one. And Uncle Luke embraced Optimist football. I was playing football. Miami, we the number one recruit in finding a football player. Tad Johnson, you know, say he had the 40s, all these dudes, Edwin James. He played with Peyton Manning, 22 goals in his mouth. You know what I'm saying? Michael McKenzie, Omar Rowe, you know what I'm saying? All these dudes, you know, they from Miami. And the park had such a great culture. I'm talking about being young, 9, 10 years old. It was just such an embracing culture. It was so hip-hop, man. It was so beautiful, man. But it arise to be a lot, though. You know, it arise to be what we talk about today.
So you started to get more involved in the music industry.
Yeah, I got involved when I'm at that park, as you would say, through Uncle Al. Through Uncle Al, I had a bunch of artists. Rollo Boys, Toro, God bless his dead. He was always in the music aspect. And Uncle Al and him, we would jam and put 20 speakers in the air in the middle of the block all day. All day. Ain't no not Sunday. No. Every day. The whole 90, 91, 92. Man, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. It stopped at like 90, 96. All day. Different hoods. And Uncle Al was the person that brought that to us in Miami. Yeah.
So when it kicked off East Coast, West Coast, what was you thinking around that time? I think I was like, what, middle 90s?
Yeah, that happened in 96. Yeah, it was a big war within them, you know. But we had somebody called Andre 3000, you know. He was a good friend of mine, but he always let it be known that the South had something to say. And it was East and West, but the South was here, and we was here to stay and to make a noise and then let it be known we're from the South and we're gonna be reckoned with it. You're gonna understand us. And today, the South got the music industry for the last 20 years and ain't trying to give it to nobody.
I remember, was it the Miami Winter Music Conference for all the ravers?
You remember that one? Jack the Rapper, Freakneek. Okay. Yeah, you remember? Yeah, you were in the Phoenix. You gotta come down there. Jack the Rapper, How Can I Be Down with Peter Thomas? Yeah. it was expanding amazing.
When Tupac and Biggie came on the scene then, what were you thinking?
It was exceptional, but music was kind of different back then. You know, Tupac was just selling 500,000. You know, he wasn't selling that much, you know, till when he got out of jail. All Eyes on Me did amazing, but Tupacalypse, Strictly for My Niggas, Thug Life, and Me Against the World was just doing 500,000. The people that was dominating was the Wu-Tang, Fugees, Wyclef, my Haitian homeboy, him, Lauryn Hill, and Wyclef. They sold 24 million. You know, like, they sold more than Tupac, Eminem, and 50 Cent put together. The Fugees, you know, Queen Latifah, you know, all of these people was popping, but in my projects, you're not allowed to play nothing but Tupac all day. You know, like, that was, hey, don't change that, Tupac.
Yeah, we've interviewed Suge Knight recently.
Oh, what, yeah?
What do you think about his story?
Nah, Suge was a hell of a dude, man. Nah, Suge was a hell of a dude, and his roster was so amazing. And I like commend him because what he had to deal with in Compton, South Central, the Jungle, Piru, Bloods, Crips, he had to deal with a lot. And some people don't really see what he had to deal with. And he did a hell of a job, man. Suge is something amazing, man. Yeah, he did that.
Do you have any thoughts you could share on the deaths of Tupac and Biggie?
Really, for Tupac, man, Tupac was somebody. I'm talking about, I became a bad boy killer. Like, I'll do whatever. I'm talking about, I wanted to always be around Pop. You know, I never got in a room with him, closed in with him, you know, but, you know, anything of his songs, you know, I was a bad boy killer. Jay-Z died too. Looking out for Mobb Deep. Nigga, if I find you, weak motherfuckers don't deserve to breathe. How many niggas ready to ride for me? Yay, yay. Like, I was with him, man. Like, man, how he could get this monster in me, crunk up? Man, that was up. He was amazing to get this monster in me, crunk up. That man could do that. Not many people could do that like he did to me.
So we've got loads of questions that have come in about Diddy, of course. And, you know, you told me previously that you've been to party. You went to parties that Diddy invited you to. You took substances over there. And J-Lo, you know, you was partying with J-Lo and things like that. Could you elaborate on what that was like, please?
Yeah, you know, Puff really, Puff was the essential of where you wanted to be and who you wanted to be around. Puff would throw some extravagant aspect where Kid Rock came, God bless the dead, Prince would come, Denzel Washington would come. You know what I'm saying? He would bring some of the most elite people and then bring street people like me around to be around them. So his parties became so many different tiers of people within one that it was something that it made you because you went to the party, you know?
It's like, yeah, a good networking opportunity.
Oh my God, you come out of that thing, man. You come out of that thing with phone numbers never before. It was better than any other networking aspect. You go to the Hamptons, the all-white party, in 97, oh my gosh. Man, you go in there, you like, man, Sanaa Lathan in here, Nia Long, Vivica Fox. I'm talking about if they wanted to be the who's who, they had to go to the party. So, you know, not just them, even rock stars. You know, Kid Rock, he gonna make sure he get there too. You would see country singers there. Paris Hilton wouldn't miss a Puff party. Every time I'm there, it made Paris Hilton, hip hop. Like Paris here, Kim Kardashian here, Nicole Murphy here. It was the place to be.
How did your relationship with Diddy come about in the first place?
50 Cent.
How did your relationship with 50 Cent come about then, before that?
My relationship with 50 Cent really was on some managing a rapper named Game that was part of his record label. And my man, Jimmy Hinchman, got the contract on Game. He's letting me get 20% of whatever's going on in the South. Me and Snake. And, you know, I'm really worried about selling my drugs, but 50 came in with these two songs, Wankster and In the Club. Like, 50 Cent, Eminem, of course, the Fugees, I did them, but Eminem, Nelly, they stole 10 million. Like, you know, Tupac, when he died, 10 million. But it's like, he blew up 50 Cent. So he was the dude to be a top business with. So we moved in on 50 Cent, met him backstage, had a rapper named Game and said, hey, 50, we got a rapper named Game, man. He'll be look good for you for the West Coast. But he kind of like, okay, so there was a real gangster named 50 Cent. He was on Rockets Island. He died. And his mother and baby mother was doing awful. So went to go find his mother and baby mother and say, and then pull up back on 50. Hey, 50, this is 50 Cent. You done took the man's name. This is mother and his wife. You know what I'm saying? You know the man is dead, and do you know he almost have a tombstone? But 50, he did a documentary on it. You know what I'm saying? With Jimmy Hinchman and everybody in it, as into, oh, you know what? I'm going to hell. Give them a tombstone, gave them some money. Then we started to really network and say, hey, 50, we got a rapper here, man, named The Game. Why don't you take a look at him, make him the west side of G-Unit. And he agreed, looked into it. Wanted a couple of favors from us. We've been around. He just came in. So he made him part of his artist, his entourage.
And when you met Diddy for the first time, what impression did you have of him?
Nah, he was like that. You know, one of them dudes that raised up from, he not no street dude that made money. It's two different kind of dudes I be saying. It's a jailbird and a street dude. He was mostly a jailbird. And within his jailbird aspect, you know, got a nice size from Queens. He held it down and did his time and did his. So,
oh, we've lost your audio, Ali. I think I can't hear you. Let me see if I can hear you on the on this. Yeah. Let me see what's happened. Has someone called you on your phone or something? Has it knocked your audio off?
Nah, somebody called in.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was. You're back. All right. So do you think then, is Diddy the kind of person cut out to survive prison?
I can't lie to you, man. When you got money, somebody gonna clean your boots. Somebody gonna clean your cell. Somebody gonna go ahead and have your towel waiting for you. Somebody gonna stand in front of your door. Now, do you want to live as into pain people face? Is a different question than survival. That man got money. He's around a bunch of poor people, man. Hell yeah, he rich. Man, they gonna be begging for that money.
All right, you've just served almost 20 years. So yeah. You know all about the prison politics.
Yeah.
You know, in America. And every state's got kind of different politics. So where Diddy is housed presently, wouldn't he have a jacket for the nature of his crimes? Wouldn't that work against him?
Now that can work against you as far as somebody moving in to get a check. But when you in prison, if there's a dude, Sanford,
Sam Bankman-Freedman.
Not Bankman-Freedman, another one that did a Ponzi scheme, Sanford, but he from Florida. So I don't allow, I go at it at all the pedophiles and the rapists, but I don't allow Virginia or anybody else, New York or LA, to get on his ass. I'm the only one can get on him and make sure he good. You gotta be from Florida. So the New York dudes are gonna hold a political shield around him, and he gonna make sure they good.
Because there's been some serious allegations in the civil lawsuits about him, you know, against kids, like young, you know, underage, things like that. And, you know, I know you're a stand-up guy. You would have never, if you'd have seen anything like that, you would have stopped it. So because he's got these allegations against him with kids, wouldn't that make him a target?
Yeah, that make you a target, man. Yeah, that's no good. Yeah, that ain't good at all. Yeah, I never read his shit. Now you can't do that though, man. That ain't copacetic, yo. Like, yeah, we got to get rid of him. I mean, within Florida, I'm gonna say, yeah, he got to go. Yeah, he got. We don't want his money. We don't want none from that bitch. That bitch got to go. Somebody, whoever hit him up, hit him up, man, and get them from around here, man. But you know.
So you know,
he's in a detention center right now. He's not in prison.
Yeah, he's pre-trial.
Yeah, so anything that happened to him, it can help his cause. So there's a lot of good security there.
So you mentioned partying with J-Lo. What was that like?
Man, J-Lo bring all the sexy girls around. Ooh. Ooh. When J-Lo come around, man, beautiful women just come around, man, and just hang around and just, hey, man, I'm talking about you get a second, third, fourth girl, you like, damn. Man, J-Lo brings some beautiful, I don't know, that's how I always seen it. Like, well, when we go out with J-Lo, boy, you know, that's when Puff had J-Lo, but damn, you know, I don't know, that's all I really know her from. I don't know her, you know, but J-Lo brings some of this beautifulest woman to come around, man. J-Lo like that now.
do you think that J-Lo and Diddy's relationship was real or it was staged? Because supposedly he was in love with Kim Porter at the time.
Yeah, but J-Lo was made from In Living Colors. She was just a dancing girl. So J-Lo knew how to climb to the top through hip hop. She always did music with Jadakiss, old Dirty Bastard. She was a dancing girl for the Wayne brothers. You know what I'm saying? You know, Jamie Foxx done said, man, you know, never thought she can aspire, but I commend her on climbing the ladder. But she came through the ranks of hip hop, you know, just being a little dancing girl, you know?
A lot of people are asking if you partied with Jay-Z and Beyonce or you had any stories about them.
Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, nah, Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, sometimes I'm at Puff House, Beyonce come, ain't nothing, you know, she just got to kiss everybody around the house. I just be like, hey, B, she's not very talkative, you know, but Jigga, Jay-Z really mastered a lot of situations to make dudes keep their own masters. He always talk to you and be like, hey man, business-wise, how he can uplift you or help you out with a song. You know, when we party, you know, we party together a lot of times, but you know, Jay-Z, you know, he been around a long time, man. Man, That man is controlling the halftime show of the Super Bowl. So his power and his aristocratic level is something that is needed today to move forward. I really don't, you know, I see other people's genres, you know, Scooter Bum, Country Garth Brooks and all these people that's leading they genre, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, I applaud Jay-Z today, man. I truly do, though. I do.
Do you think any of these big names, you know, including the ones we've talked about, or people like Leonardo DiCaprio, are worried about Diddy being in jail and the free coughs, and possibly there's like videos that have been recorded that were secret that they didn't know were getting recorded, and things could come out in the future?
See, I don't know that side of Puff. I'm somebody, I might just bring something for him, drugs, but I always want to be genuine. I don't be with none of that. I don't know what's going on, but I want to be at the party, though. And these dudes like Leonardo, like you say, Leonardo DiCaprio, and all of them want to be there also. So there's a lot of quietness going on right now that I really don't understand. So I'm just out of jail and I'm just really watching, because the level was so amazing that I'm still trying to figure out. That's why I got to read the legal papers when I get time. But freak off, I'm trying to understand how the hell ABC, CNN, how you use this word freak off. You can't use freak off. At night the moon hit, it's freak off time. All the Guns N' Roses, everybody's on freak. The Beatles, everybody's on, man. I'm troubled by it, but I'm listening, but I'm troubled by it. But I'd be like, whoa, Cassie, that's dead wrong. But you gave her $30 million. And if she signed, she accepted the apology. So I'd be saying, did Cassie really get her money? And I'd be like, she got her money? Oh, okay. But I try to understand the word freak off. Like, what does that mean? What does it mean, though? Huh, son?
Apparently, it was something that Diddy and them used. That's what they called the parties. The after parties, was it?
I don't know about them things there. Yeah, those, I'm Haitian. No good. We don't, yeah, I don't support, no. I don't know what them people do after that, you know. I never had no problem with them in jail. I'd be like, two men together is like two hyenas. The culture was always, I never understood it. I don't know why Obama passed this shit. Like, them people, they act crazy. They act retarded. I'd be like, what the fuck wrong with you? But, you know, I don't know how CNN, ABC can use this word freak off, but you know,
So you got a question from Jerome, and Jerome is asking if you'd ever heard anything about Diddy's sexuality.
Yeah, we used to say shiny suit. You remember that? You used to say that, Sean, right?
Shiny what?
Shiny suit.
No, I never heard of it.
He used to wear shiny suits in the video. So we say, man, you got on these shiny suits?
Do you think, you know, that you see a lot of the guys portraying a macho image, but other things are going on behind the image? Do you think the public was misled a bit by some of these guys?
I don't know. That ain't my business. But I don't know, man. That ain't my business. I don't get, those people are crazy. And they sell baby oil everywhere. I don't know. So I don't know, man.
Were you aware of the baby oil back then?
At all. Oh, no. No, sir. Nah, that's some wild shit.
You didn't see the bottles laying around?
That's them other rooms. You know, I don't know them rooms. I'm in the back with the ladies. I'll be the beautiful ladies. Yeah.
So there was a situation in a nightclub, and we've interviewed a lady, a very brave lady, very strong, powerful speaker called Natanya Rubin. And she was in the nightclub the night J-Lo and Diddy and Shine came in. And she's claiming that J-Lo allegedly smuggled a gun in. And she's claiming that Diddy shot her in the face. Did you ever hear anything about that story?
I read that before, and I heard a lot of things about it. That circle of people, somebody in that circle, that lady can't be crazy. Somebody in that circle shot her. You know, people like that got to get compensated. But you know, I don't know who did that, what happened, but if she got shot in the face, she's not crazy. And she know who the fuck was in that circle. Now, there's an issue again with money. If five of us, I done been locked up with four people. And you know this, Sean, money dictate a lot of issues. If I'm locked up with four people. And it's a gun. I'm like, man, hey, I'm about to go get, God bless the dead, Johnny Cochran. Who you want? I'm broke. What about you? I'm broke. What about you? I'm broke. All right. First and foremost, sign this paper and say it ain't me. So there's casualties when you don't have no money. I'm sorry to say, money move mountains. You can buy dynamite. And it can switch the story around, and this person might have to take the beef, this person might have to take it, but I have to honor and get them their lawyer. So save your money, gangs. Save your money.
Yeah, because Shine came out and said that he took the fall, but apparently he was transferred $1 million.
Yeah, he got to do the time. That's good money. That's what you get for being broke.
So you're saying you get what justice you can afford?
You know, Sean, you was in the business. A lot of cases happen. Everybody want lawyers from you. You got to say, hey, what happened to your money? Oh, I spent it in the club. I had this girl. Oh, my gosh, I bought the house. I'm gambling. Oh, okay, listen. Yeah, keep me out of this. I'm worried about me. I'm not worried about you.
So Kazza's asking about your Dre stories.
Who?
Dre.
Dr. Dre?
Yep.
Yeah, Dr. Dre, you know, my real encounter with Dr. Dre was my homeboy, Jimmy Hinchman. When we started managing Game, Jimmy Hinchman, the real East Coast and West Coast wasn't about Tupac or Biggie. He was about Jimmy Hinchman and Suge, two big egos. So Suge didn't like it either, but Dr. Dre didn't want to do it. When he found out a New York dude is going to manage a Compton dude. So Dr. Dre say, oh no, oh no, oh no. So we trying to get a meeting with him, like, hey man, sometimes you gotta talk to a dude to see what kind of dude he is, forget about the word through the grapevine. So D-Mac put the meeting together. We got Dre, and Dre finally met Jimmy Hinchman, me, and he's like, oh man, y'all not bad dudes. I don't care about a Brooklyn dude managing a Compton dude. I'm just worried about the talent and to go forward. So, you know, Dre, you know, we kind of caught him too in his growth. You know, 2006 Dre, not 95, 94, 93 Dre, you know? I'm sure he was a different dude then, but We hung out with Dre, party with Dre. When you go out with Dre, man, woo. Man, the West Coast, I'm talking about, you notice how white people, Asian people, the police officer, all just be like, hi, Dre. Hi, Dre. You know? And he got Eminem with him. Oh, my gosh. Pandemonium. So, you know, that's my only real connection to dude, you know?
Going back to East Coast, West Coast beef then, what did you think about the arrest of Keefe D?
Yeah, Keefe D, man. This man spent about 5 years. Sometimes your claim to fame, you got to watch what your claim to fame is. And you keep going on air talking about your claim to fame is you shot Tupac. Come on, man. What the fuck?
Crazy.
Are you stupid?
Crazy.
Pass the gun. Man, what the fuck are you saying? You did what? You going 60 minutes, I passed the gun. Nobody gonna arrest you. You go on the Vibe, you go on this award, you go on Vlad, I passed the gun. No, I passed the gun. And you asked me why you indicted. Sean, why is he indicted?
I think it's called murder conspiracy.
Yeah, you dumb fuck. Yeah, he's a dumb fuck. Yeah, he done fucked up, man. You know you done fucked up, right? Yeah.
You got some questions from Consigliere Music, and that is, have you ever had any interactions with DJ Magic Mike?
Who's that?
I don't know. I'll go to the next one. Cash Money Records Slim?
Yeah, you know, I went through a little something with Lil Wayne, and I tried to put my artist out with him, and I was giving him a lot of favors in Miami, and he was really, he was being big-headed, and I was doing business with him. I wanted to be around him, and he was doing bad. Baby wasn't fucking with him. He's walking around here, Baby walking around with Yo Gotti and other rappers. So I'm moving in on Wayne like I'm with him. And he's doing these songs in the studio. He's doing these songs. Go DJ, Amelie. He's doing like 9 songs in a day. I'm in there like, yo, what are you doing? You're going to oversaturate the people. But he's the best person I like been in the studio with as far as taste, good music, good bounce, good drums, pick a beat, and go. But anyway, I got an artist I'm putting out, Basil Knight. So I'm Scarface, give me a song for real, give me a song, Rick Ross, Jackie O. And I'm like, I need a song, Wayne. So he lied to me and tell me he's somewhere where he ain't. So I let him know I know where you at, so I go there. When I go there, he mad. So, but I'm like, hey, listen to the songs, man. So he go in the room, put the song. He played a song and played him and Wyclef, but he's mad. I guess he's mad because I just pull up and we had some street dealings and I had owed him some money, but I had told him they got messed up. Wait, I'm gonna get it for you. So I'm like, we're talking about music right now, man. So he's not really adhering to what I'm saying. So he just take it out and just put it on my chest. I don't want it. I'm like, God damn. So I grab him. Pop! I throw him on the wall. Pop! I take his chains off. I say, now you can't go. Now you can't be in Miami now. Now you got to leave Miami. So three of his homeboys about to get up. So my homeboy next to me, he fumbled with the gun. So I'm like, hey, I dropped. I'm like, hey. So he pulled a gun out on him. Back up, back up. So I come up out the studio with her and everything. I leave. So I make a bunch of flyers. Man, Cash Money got to leave Miami, man, or show Miami love. So my man from Cincinnati, Alex Garrett, he like, man, he had the Portofino Yacht Club, so I go there. I put gas in on his Phantom Rolls Royce, and I burn it up. So it burned up. Oof. So now my phone is ringing. Everybody, I'm like, man, it was, you know, it was like bad business, but I didn't give a fuck. I got $7 million here. I got $9 million here. I got $22 million in Haiti. I got spots. I got every week coming. 1.7. I don't really give a fuck about nothing. I think I can run. I think I can go to the White House. I'm trying to get in. I feel like my mind, my ego is big because I'm rich. I got 74 cars. I got 2 Dairy Queens, 2 Subway, coin laundry. So I'm really on some. Everybody in the streets is like, fuck Wayne. They want to come close to me, close to the money. You understand that, Sean? They want to come close to that money. Like, how can I get some of that money up out of Sean? That nigga got all the ecstasy, baby. If I can get that money up out of Sean, boy, I know he'll just give me 10 grand. That shit ain't nothing for him. So, you know, and I'm doing that for so many people, and they promoting me. But Jimmy Hinchman stepped in, DJ Khaled stepped in. They kind of talked to me. So we went, got on DJ Khaled radio, and, you know, he made a song for me. We Taking Over, the remix. You can listen to it. We Taking Over, the remix. He say, I squashed my beef with Zoe. It's a bakery. It's time to make dough. So, you know, that relationship really never got back as it was, but it just became a hip-hop fable story.
They're loving you in the chat, man. They're saying you're one of the most charismatic storytellers.
Where them comments, boy? Them motherfuckers, boy, have you tiptoeing, boy? Them big day.
The next question from a viewer: can you address the rapper Gunplay, who recently responded to you mentioning his name?
Yeah, everything that he do, 100 comments is a bunch of young dudes coming after him. I can't do nothing. They gonna do it. They got him. They say, man, just chill. We got him.
The next question is, did you have any dealings with any of Diddy's bodyguards? And if so, which ones?
You know, Uncle Paulie was real cool. The dude Gene, you know, that dude Gene.
Gene Deal.
Yeah, Gene Deal was like, he was never no street dude or corporate dude. He was a state trooper. But, you know, sometimes that don't matter because he got heart. You know, he was a bodyguard, but, you know, I might be around, you know. He slapped the shit out of bitch. Bah! Shut up. He was, he got heart for a state trooper. That motherfucker didn't see no street motherfucker. And it might be 2 shootouts with dudes. Brrr. Gina be like, I'll walk you to the car. That's what I know him for. Like, I know him for that. As far as him, you know what I'm saying, saying that he was in the business, he never was in the mix like that. Like, you know, he sit outside for 5-6 hours, you know? But, you know, he don't come my way at all, you know? You show him a gun. Hey, man, I'm over 21 years old. You good? So we had a good understanding. And he just be like, I like you. I'm like, all right, yeah. I don't like you. So we had an initial issue. We never had an issue, though. But, man, you know what I'm saying? Shit is what it is, though, you know?
So you saw Gene Deal in action, and he had heart.
Yeah, him, Uncle Paulie, you know, my man Wolf, he wasn't really no bodyguard. He was a street dude, but he would play the move away, you know, move away. You know, I would do that too, man, for Puff, Naomi, when they could come through. you know, but you know, it was you know what I'm saying? It is what it is, man.
So Kobe wants to know, is the rapper Rick Ross a real street dude?
Nah, man. Rick Ross can say, I'm from Kansas City. He's from Kansas City. And, you know, I might have 800 kilos, so I'm doing my thing. Not anybody can come approach me. And on my block, I got like 115 dudes just standing. But he could come pull up. I don't know if it's for him, if it's patch up money, but I never looked at him, you know, but he could come pull up. But, you know, I'm from Kansas City. Booby been locked up since 98. That's my Kansas City. Like, that's cool, but he's been gone. I wasn't sharing that shit with nobody. Like, I'm running this shit here. You get out of state prison, you get out of jail from FSP, from Rayford prison, my wild dudes, you come to me. And I'm like, yeah, what's up? Well, let's do this. Ah, you ready? Let's do this. Like, he wasn't one of us, but I understand poetically, he is a poetic dude that can say he's from Kansas City.
What about his history of being a CO? Was that covered up back then?
Nah, that's what it was. That's what he did, you know? He did it. He was a CO, you know? He did it for Booby, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, back then, you make sure you send people commissary money. You make sure you pay their lawyer. You make sure you look out for their girl. And you get the correction officers. You make sure you look out for correction officers to make sure the boys are still good. They eating and smoking good. And they drinking good. So, shit, he likes shit. I'm going to get that. And he had a clean name. So, hey, my man Booby, you know, not me. Booby like, hey, go get that job. You really don't tell him no. You know what I'm saying? So, shit, he had to go get it.
Question,
you know, because he lived in the gutter of Kansas City.
Question from Kaza. Is Ray J Diddy's bitch?
Huh? That's what,
that's what the viewer is asking. Is Ray J Diddy's beep?
Man, Ray J gonna do whatever Diddy tell him to do, man. You know, Ray J back then, he was just Brandy's brother. Like, nobody even knew his name. Now, they go Brandy's brother. But he made his own little name, you know, Kim Kardashian. I don't really, you know, I never really mess with dude like that. I don't know him, but I just been reading through the grapevine, everything going on with him, though, but I don't really know fool.
Next viewer question is, how common is witchcraft in the music industry?
Very big. E5, very big. It's something, you know, that's what I want to see people talk about. Start talking about what's in these contracts. How the fuck you signed for 7 albums and 9 options? What did he tell you? What did he tell you to do? Like, show this paperwork, show this contract, because I do lawsuits. I don't see you. You fuck up, I'm filing on your ass. But a lot of people practice that because they want to really live the financial, aristocratic, populace of being the viral person that you talk to. And some people, we had a man Tally, he would be like, here, just sign this contract, put your blood on there, and to practice witchcraft to me is like, I can never get on my knees for you, Sean. You can never get on my knees for me. But for you to get on your knees, for a dude, you know, like Tally, sign this paper, put your blood on it, and get on your knees and worship. I think that's the ultimate thing. If you get on your knees, on two knees, even when you get married, you're supposed to do one knee. But to get on both knees and to do those things, to beg for that aspect, and to do all these rituals, man. You know, oh man.
Do you think they did something like that to Justin Bieber?
I wasn't there. I don't know. I don't know.
Shug Knight said that Diddy was pimping Bieber out to wealthy executives.
Yeah, Shug know more than me. Shug been around, but yeah, Shug, that motherfucker can't stand Diddy though.
Did you ever come across Big Homie CC? We've interviewed him. He's a good guy.
He was a bodyguard.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't know him. I saw him, but I don't know him. I don't know him.
Next question is from Seago. What's the most insane thing you can remember Diddy saying or doing?
I just used to be like, you know, I don't know, man. Diddy was kind of wild. Me, I just know him for like, because he had Sean John on his shirt. And, you know, he said, I love my walking mannequins. You know, he was a blood sucking money motherfucker. That's what I should just say, boy, you do some wild shit, and to be trending for so long, that's good, boy. Man, I'm talking about that man trended for a long time. But people gotta ask the question. There's no such thing as a CEO check and an artist check. There's no such thing. So how do the CEO get his money? He had to get it off the artist. Like Scooter Bum only can get his money up out of Taylor Swift. Yes, she wrote all the songs, she sung all the songs, she did all that, but Scooter Bum found you in the mall and said, come here, Taylor, come here. I'm gonna make you a star. And he did everything he's supposed to. But there's no such thing as a Scooter Bum check and a Taylor check. It's just one check. And he gotta get his. That's his Rolodex. That's his money. That's his motherfucking time. So, you know, education gotta come because, you know, things like hip hop, it really just started like it's 50 years old. Europe is 3,700 years old, Africa 5,300 years old. It's 50 years old, and it really got to get a little bit more expand. You know, like right now, the coolest thing to do is to kill a nigga, and dudes is dying and they broke. Dang.
So 50 Cent that said that Diddy's downfall was falling out with this company, Diageo, here in the UK, the Ciroc company.
You know them?
They were $55 billion, and they're 10% owned by BlackRock.
Yeah, see, a lot of people, man, from Harvard, Yale, you know, Stanford, people know how to do a hostile takeover. Big money take little money. That little $1 billion he got ain't shit then. $55
billion? Yep.
Oh, he might be dead.
And Diddy sued. They paid Diddy $1 billion. And then Diddy turned around and sued them for racism.
That's on Black and White?
Yep.
Dang.
And 50 Cent said that was his downfall because he was in the club, or he thought he was in the club, and they put him in his place.
Dang.
Yeah.
Dang. That's sad, though. I mean, I don't know. $55 billion
British pounds, which is what, about $70 billion US dollars?
Why would he sue them? Why didn't he just do good business with them?
He wanted more rights and he wanted more money. And he.
Yeah, you don't, all that, you don't really go about it that way, man. You gotta, you can't, I don't like that word racism, man. That's a stupid statement. Like, I'm not in the business to tell a white man don't like his skin. I tried that shit don't work. He still like his skin. So you can't be that educated and be going at nobody in that aspect because he's like, yo, I looked out for you. That's what you're going to say? All right. And some motherfucker don't want to be associated with that shit. Ain't nobody alive, motherfucker, man. Damn.
Yeah, 50 Cent said he just got... Did he got too big for his boots when it came to dealing with this liquor company?
I could agree with that, yeah.
You're getting asked if you ever met any UK rappers.
Man, they need to holler at me. They need to get at me, man. I be talking to Reese from Commentary. That's my man. I be fucking with them boys out of Manchester, Birmingham. Them boys, yeah, I be fucking with Tone. I be fucking with them, yeah, but I need them to send me some music. ZoePoundChip@gmail.com. ZoePoundChip. Go to my TikTok. AliZoAdam 305. AliZoAdam TikTok 305. Send me some music. I'm about to do something big with a record label and put music out because we got to expand. You know what I'm saying? We need to share music together, man. You know what I'm saying? And play a lot of, you know what I'm saying, cultural aspects, you know? We hip-hop. Them boys over there, hip-hop, man. Oh, yeah.
HC is asking about Lil Wayne and Birdman contract, how Wayne couldn't leave.
Yeah, I read that one. When he finally got out, it's always about percentage within it. He gave Baby another 51% and Wayne got 49%. And unbeknownst, he found Drake and Nicki and fucked up again. So total control is on Baby. So no matter what he say, don't fucking matter. Like, yeah, nah, that, I'm only going to do what I want to do. So why do that? Like, you know, I don't know.
So Lisa wants to know, would you say that street life... Oh, we've lost him. We'll get him back. I think his phone's run out of charge or something. Thank you for all the questions, folks. And we've got Annika Lucas. That is coming next. You may have seen Annika Lucas on the Valuetainment podcast, recently going viral. And I've been a friend of Annika Lucas's for years. We've got her coming on. It's a pre-record, but also we're going to try and get her to come back to do a live Q&A for you guys. So let me see. We've still got loads of questions for Zoe. Let me just contact Reese. Hey, Reese, I'm still live. We lost him. We're still answering questions. Do you want to just give him a call and see if he can come back on to finish the questions? We've got another guest, Annika Lucas, coming on at 11:15 UK. So that will give him about 20-something more minutes to finish answering questions. Yeah, Zoe, he's very charismatic. He's full of energy. I like the little sounds he makes, the pop, pop, pops. And he's a great guest. He's been in prison for almost 20 years. He's only recently been released. He's been in Diddy videos. He's been in other rap videos. And we started out this broadcast. I don't know if you saw it. We were showing him one of the videos, he was in. But earlier today, he showed me several of the videos he was in. And, you know, he was there at the Diddy parties. He saw the celebs. And, you know, he knows what was going on to an extent. But he wasn't at the after parties where the dirty stuff was going down. Allegedly. We've always got to add that Diddy is claiming that he is innocent. And he's going to go to court and he's going to prove this. And all these allegations against him are motivated by people. Some of them are motivated by people trying to shake him down, etc. So, yeah, we've still got quite a lot of questions for Zoe if we can get him back in. He's not very hip to technology. But the guy who arranged it is on the phone with him right now to try and find out what happened. And when we did our dry run with him today, Yeah, he came in. He came in. That was no problem. But today it took him 20 minutes to log on. Ali has a phone call telling him don't talk. Turn off. Don't talk to that man. So Ali knows my history in America, and Suge Knight knows my history in America. You know that I've been incarcerated, and people who've been incarcerated like to talk to other people who've been incarcerated. So it doesn't matter what people say to him. We all know we are stand-up guys, and we have a mutual respect. And there's a certain language when you go through USA incarceration. You can tell stories to people all day long, but it's only the other people who've been in there know and understand exactly what you've been through. It's so intense. You know, one minute everything can be fine. Next thing, you look over and a guy's leg's pointing in the completely wrong direction. I remember seeing that, a guy's leg pointing in the completely wrong direction. I don't know what they'd done to him. Actually, I think they ran him into a wall or a pole. And this guy's just rolling around on the floor, screaming for painkillers, opiates. I remember walking past a guy one time. It was a mentally ill old man who wouldn't stop rambling. And I don't know what the gang did to him, but there was just blood squirting out the back of his neck, back of his head. I saw so many people's teeth just get knocked out and bounced on the floor. And, you know, I often get asked, how does a nerdy business graduate from the UK survive this kind of an environment? I'm not claiming to be no tough guy. I was a business studies student, a guy working in the financial markets who'd watched too many gangster movies. And as a young man, there's a condition called gangsteritis, where you've watched too many of these movies and you get around these characters in real life and you're on substances, and the substances are affecting your decision-making abilities, your brain chemicals, and then all of a sudden you think you're in a movie. I mean, me and Wildman were joking. We're in a movie. We're never going to get caught. We're above the law. Wildman was the real deal. He could fight. And he opened the door into that world of meeting these gangsters. But for me, I had a pure case of gangsteritis. And, you know, it was the third or fourth year in my incarceration when I met two Tonys who I'd been in a situation with a cellmate who was a serial home invader torturer. He was breaking into people's houses, tying up with duct tape, taking ball peen hammers to their kneecaps. My book, Prison Time, starts out with me walking into the cell with this guy. Anyway, I got attacked by his mate, big guy, biker. And I fought back, but it didn't end up very well for me. It was like trying to hit a big bag of cement. But my new cellmate, Long Island, introduced me to a guy called Two Tonys. He knew I'd been in a situation with these guys. And he knew Two Tonys, if he took me under his wing, Two Tonys had a lot of respect. He was a multiple homicide murderer, an associate of the Bonanno crime family, serving 140 plus years. And Long Island asked me to play Two Tonys a game of chess. And I was like, what's he in for? And he's like, yeah, multiple murders, 140. I'm like, whoa, do I want to play chess against this guy? He might want to murder me next. So yeah, he beat the death penalty. He had respect because when you sign up for the mafia, and Two Tonys was ex-military, most of my friends in prison were ex-military. And their attitude was, it's kill or be killed. In the gangster lifestyle, we don't harm women, we don't harm kids, not like these pieces of crap now. Two Tonys never harm women and kids. The people now, they, you know, the cartel, they murder your entire family. They film it and they put it online. So he had a moral code. And when Two Tonys took me under his wing because he liked me. Yeah, there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference about the old school and the new school. And his moral code was such, because he'd murdered rival gangsters, people respected him. When he took me under his wing, he asked me to write his life story. Basically, I beat him at a game of chess. And he said to me at the end of the game of chess, why did you beat me so fast? And I said, because you were speaking, you know, your game, you were speaking what you were going to plan doing out loud. You wouldn't show someone your hand of cards in a game of cards, would you? And he slapped his head and he goes, oh, me and my big mouth. But Two Tonys was testing me. Long Island had told him I was a blogger and a writer, and Two Tonys was looking for someone to write his life story. And once at the end of the game of chess, he said to me, Sean, I think you're an honest guy. I think we've met for a reason. I'm looking for someone to write my life story. And would you do that? And I said I would be honored. And, you know, for months and months on end, I was going in his cell. And he had prisoners watching because we weren't allowed cell visiting. And I was using, let's just say I was playing the system to get what I was writing out of the prison, because he was talking about murders. Yeah, murders he'd been convicted of, but also murders that he hadn't been convicted of. And that book was published in 2010, but sadly, Two Tonys died. No, not 2010. So it was published after 2010. It's called The Mafia Philosopher Two Tonys. It's on Amazon. Sadly, he didn't live long enough to read his own book, but he was a big reader himself. He introduced me to Ivan Denisovich, A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And whenever people complained about anything, he would laugh. He would say, why are you complaining about the food being cold? Where Ivan was housed in the Russian gulag, they were fighting over fish eyeballs just to try and stay alive. There's always somebody worse off. So yeah, he was a multiple homicide murderer, but he was also a natural philosopher, and he taught me a lot about life. So the spirit of Two Tonys lives on within me. And I remember the lessons, the life lessons he taught me. And it's surreal thinking back now that I was in there with these characters. And there's a big story in his book about how he earned the name Two Tonys. So he was mentored by a guy called Charlie Batts Battaglia, a Bonanno crime family guy who had whacked people from coast to coast. And Battaglia was a master of getting rid of the stiffs. He'd never been busted for any of these stiffs. And when Two Tonys was starting out in the mafia with his crime partner, a young guy called Sal Spinelli, and Two Tonys worshipped Battaglia. I mean, you can go back to my Charlie Batts. Yeah, exactly. If you go back to my blogs, John's Jail Journal, where I documented my journey through jail and prison, I wrote about the Two Tonys and Charlie Battaglia. Yeah, love Annika Lucas's energy. Thank you in the chat. We've got Annika Lucas interview coming in 15 minutes. 15 minutes. If we can't get Ali back on, I will answer questions and freestyle and wait just until we can, you know, in case we can try and get him back on. So anyway, as Two Tonys rose up the ranks and he had some whacks under his belt, he called himself a whacker of men. You know, they turned the table on Charlie Batts. In the beginning, Charlie Batts would call him to a venue in Tucson, some like cafe. It would be a Sunday. The churchgoers were in there going home and stuff like that. And they idolized this guy and they would do what he said. But when Bats went to prison and came out 10 years later, and to Tony's head stature now as a whacker of men. Bats tried to run the same routine on them in this restaurant in Tucson and said to them, look, you need to shake down some guy. And this was a guy they'd been working with, and they didn't like taking orders from Bats anymore. Now, when they turned the table on Bats, two Tony stood up and threatened Bats. And Bats was one of the guys who'd been involved in the murder of the two Tonys in California. I think it was Bats and Jimmy the Weasel. And Bats and Jimmy the Weasel whacked two guys named Tony who had been robbing places. They got out of control and they just robbed some places that were protected by the Italian mafia. So the hit came down on the two Tonys, and Bats and Jimmy the Weasel were the ones who whacked those guys. So when two Tonys turned the table on Bats and Bats backed down, his two Tonys crime partner said, Sal Spinelli, oh, I'm throwing out too many Italian mafia names to you guys. Sal Spinelli turned to two Tonys and said to him that when you turned the table on the Bats just now, I could see the spirits of the two Tonys above the table. And from then on, two Tonys became the nickname for my friend Two Tonys, whose book I wrote, The Mafia Philosopher, Two Tonys. Honestly, the audio book, the Two Tonys audio book, I listen to it every so many years, and it brings tears to my eyes, because when I finally said goodbye to Two Tonys, Two Tonys was in medium security still, and I'd been moved down to minimum security, but the yards were next to each other, and Two Tonys knew I was about to get released from prison. This was in 2007, and he came to the fence, the chain link fence with the razor wire on the top, to say goodbye to me. And you know, Two Tonys, this guy, he looked like Uncle Junior, but he still had that ferocious killer character side to him. And people are asking about the audiobook. So the Two Tonys audiobook, if you go on Amazon, wherever you are in the world, just put in The Mafia Philosopher, Two Tonys, Sean Atwood. All 17 of my books are available on audio. And the Two Tonys audiobook will come up. It's on Amazon and it's on ACX. So Two Tonys is at the fence saying goodbye to me. And he's breaking down, and I've never seen him break down. I've never seen a soft side to him. You know, I had to talk him out of digging up shanks and taking that out on people. I had to talk him out of these situations. He was hardcore. He'd buried a lot of people. So to see him breaking down psychologically, talking to me, hold on, I'm getting word from Ali's guy. Not yet. They're trying to get Ali back in. If we can, we can. If not, we'll bring him back on another occasion. Reese, still try and bring him back in. I can move the next guest out to like 11:30 or whatever. There's still a lot of questions for him if he can get back in. You know, the viewers absolutely love him. So let's keep working on that for the next 5 or 10 minutes or so. Yeah, so Two Tony said to me at the fence, he said to me, Sean, I never thought I would feel like this with somebody, but spending all this time with you, telling you my life story, you know, just chatting with you and kicking it. He says, I feel like you are the son that I never had. And at that point, tears started rolling down his eyes and mine. And he said that he wasn't good at saying goodbyes, and he didn't like being emotional. And the last thing he did, this was the last I saw of him. He patted his chest, and he said, "LNR, little bro," which means love and respect in prison. He said, "LNR, little bro, LNR, I'll always remember you. I'll always remember you like this, and you know, stay in touch." And I'm like, "We're always going to stay in touch, LNR, two Tonys, much LNR." And we both turned away, and tears were streaming down my eyes as I was walking away, just thinking how he had took me under his wing. I never got any situations again after that. There was a situation where my activism, I was exposing the jail conditions through my blog, John's Jail Journal. And because I was writing about prison stuff, I did actually do a blog about how the inmates were buying items from the inmate store, the commissary, and they were putting these items, connecting these items together to make syringes. It was a stupid thing. I shouldn't have really done that. I thought it was an interesting anecdote for the viewers. But a shot caller on one of the other yards said that I was putting secrets out there online, and he put out a green light out to have me attacked or killed. And all hell broke loose where I was housed at that point. And people... I managed to have my own single cell at that point, and I come out for a shower, and I was keeping my door locked because people were trying to push my door open. Now, I had bonded with so many people through the blog, writing their stories, putting their stories online, and these guys were getting pen pals. People were sending them books from all over the world. Two Tony said it was the most fascinating thing that he was stuck in this prison. He never thought he would communicate with anyone on the outside world ever again. And some school teacher in China could write in or put in the comments on the blog and ask him questions about his mafia life. The blog became a bridge to the outside world, to all these people who were doing serious time. I mean, I was only sentenced to 9.5 years. They looked at me as a visitor to their world. So when this green light came down saying I was putting secrets out about what the fellas were doing, you know, related to this, the guys whose blogs I'd been writing and who were getting these pen pals and getting the books sent to them, they all stood up for me because they knew my heart was in the right place. And it was, even though things got hairy for 2 days, it was when my parents were visiting as well. My parents saw I was stressed out. Every time my parents visited, something kicked off, unfortunately. But in the end, two Tonys called a favor in with the shot caller, and the green light got squashed. It got squashed. Now, when I moved to minimum security, that shot caller was on that yard. The beef had been squashed, but just to make me extra safe, two Tonys had this big guy before I landed on that yard called Tank. This big guy he called Tank. Go door to door to every cell on that yard and say, "English Sean's coming here. England is coming here. If anyone has got a problem with him, then tell me right now and we'll handle it." And yeah, I feel blessed. I didn't know exactly at the time that had happened. And I was a bit apprehensive when I got to that yard. And I only found out later on that this guy that built like the tank had done that. Two Tonys, later on when I was released, in one of his letters when he was dying, he said to me that there were situations he looked out for me. There were situations that I didn't even know about. Yeah. So thank God. Yeah, yeah, Tank. Thank God. Just as people come into your life to harm you, there are people who come into your life to protect you. And I had some guardian angels. Did I become more spiritual in prison? I did. I certainly did. I got into the yoga. I got into the meditation. And I got into working out. I had, a workout partner called Iron Man. And Iron Man, he's the one who encouraged me to join our karate dojo when I got out. And when I got out, you know, I trained in karate for almost 10 years. And that is a spiritual journey as well. Combined with the yoga, combined with all the fitness classes, because I've got this addictive adrenaline junkie personality, all this stuff keeps me grounded and balanced. And I credit it. And, you know, we've interviewed over 1,000 people on the channel. We've interviewed many people who've been in prison. And the guys who succeed are the guys who are into fitness, are into boxing, are into martial arts, because they're channeling that energy that they were channeling into the negative stuff that could have gotten them killed into positive activity. And that's why I fully encourage, you know, I do talks in the prisons here, and I fully encourage the fellas to get into martial arts, boxing, and to continue that, you know, the working out when they get out of the prison sentences. All right, we're 1 minute away from the Annika Lucas broadcast going out. Let me just make sure. Yeah, the premiere is going to begin shortly. This video is going to customize over to it. What we'll do is we'll try and arrange a part two with Ali. I love that guy. He's such a good vibe. We will try and arrange a part two with him. Just going to double check that's customizing. Yep, that's customized over. Thank you for all of your questions. Much love to everyone, wherever you are in the world. And Annika Lucas, it's harrowing. Don't have the kids in the room while you're watching it. She was transported to elites in Belgium at the age of 6. And it's disgusting what happened to her. But she is a spiritual warrior. She is a pure soul. And she is such a strong woman because of what she went to. And this is a pre-recorded interview, but the live chat will be running right next to it. So enjoy it, folks, if that's the right word. She is amazing. People say in the chat, she is amazing. And send her love and support if you can, if you see her on any platforms. She's a fantastic person. Also, all of Ali's links, if you want to reach out to him, his Instagram, TikTok, and Reese, who organized this, they're all in the description box here as well. Shout out to JoJo in Arizona. Thank you, my friends. Enjoy Annika's, and we will be